Coming up on Tech News Today, government says we should trust them with the spying. They'll do it right. Also, Apple signs Sony for iRadio, maybe. Maybe we get the iRadio soon. And Google Wallet. It's a little short. Can you help them out? All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, June 7th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show we keep you up to date with the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the news. The Washington Post and The Guardian reported yesterday that 9 tech companies, Microsoft, Yahoo, Google, Facebook, Paltalk, YouTube, Skype, AOL, and Apple, gave the U.S. National Security Agency direct access to their data through a project called PRISM. All the companies, except AOL and Paltalk, have denied knowledge of any such program. The Washington Post later backtracked, saying that the slides leaked to them by a career intelligence officer may have been imprecise. Another classified document the Post saw referenced equipment installed at company-controlled locations rather than direct access to servers. U.S. Director of National Intelligence James R. Clapper claimed both articles had numerous inaccuracies and categorically denied that PRISM spies on U.S. citizens. Wall Street Journal further reported that AT&T, Sprint, and other ISPs collect telephony metadata similar to the report about Verizon yesterday. Finally, The Guardian reported that the U.K.'s government communications headquarters has reviewed data collected through PRISM since 2010.
Sources tell All Things D that Apple has signed up Sony, the holdout of the big three music labels, to its so-called iRadio service. So can we expect an announcement at WWDC on Monday? It may still depend on whether or not Apple has also signed Sony's publishing arm, which may still be in negotiations.
Microsoft published several pieces on Xbox Wire answering some questions about the Xbox One. The Xbox One will be able to game offline for up to 24 hours on your primary console. But what about used games? Microsoft says that it does not charge a platform fee to retailers, publishers, or consumers for enabling transfer of these games, and that the Xbox One is designed so game publishers can enable you to trade in your games at participating retailers. Microsoft even addressed the privacy concerns about the Xbox Kinect. Microsoft says while you can turn on your Xbox with a voice command, that listening mode can be turned off.
Bloomberg reports sources tell them Apple will start an iPhone trade-in program this month to encourage users to upgrade to the iPhone 5. Apple has partnered with Brightstar, a mobile phone distributor, to run the exchange program. Apple and Brightstar have not commented on the plan.
Samsung shares have fallen, in fact, to a four-month low after J.P. Morgan Chase cut share price estimates for Samsung by 9.5% to 1.9 million won and lowered its 2013 earnings estimate by 9% because of slow demand for the Galaxy S4 smartphone, according to Bloomberg. Poor consumer demand stemming from Europe is probably impacting demand, and J.P. Morgan Chase now expects annual S4 shipments to be about 20 to 30% lower than they previously thought.
There is patent peace in our times, ladies and gentlemen. TiVo settled its patent dispute with Google's Motorola Mobility, Time Warner Cable, and Cisco to the tune of $490 million. TiVo will enter into a cross-licensing agreement with Google and Cisco. The settlement amount was less than what was expected by analysts, so TiVo's stock took a hit on the news. TiVo also approved a $200 million stock buyback plan.
The BlueStacks GamePop console gets more interesting every day. In addition to the ability to run games from Android, the startup announced Friday that the set-top box will run iOS games through a virtualization process called Looking Glass. CEO Rosen Sharma has no idea how Apple might react to this. I guess we'll find out. The console is free for pre-orders by June, and the service will cost you $6.99 a month.
Apple gave a Google employee a bit of a hard time in court yesterday after it attempted as it attempts, rather, to prove wrong the Department of Justice claim that Apple conspired to inflate ebook prices. Lead Apple attorney Oren Snyder hammered on Thomas Tarvey, director of strategic relationships for Google. During his testimony, Tarvey couldn't remember, or said he couldn't, which publishing executives he spoke to or the circumstances around the conversations or any real other details. He offered not really any specifics and kept referring to written testimony. "You can't recall a single name of anyone at a single publisher?" asked Snyder. "No," Tarvey said repeatedly.
Stop hammering me. It hurts.
Ow.
Were you upset?
Oh, nice.
Were you guys upset that Microsoft Windows 8.1 video earlier
Livid.
This week didn't have the start button?
I couldn't
stop crying.
Well, a new video is out from Computex to stop your tears. Microsoft is showing off the start button, including all the apps in the app screen that comes up when it's pressed. Microsoft 8.1 preview is scheduled to come out June 26th.
U.S. intelligence officials tell NBC News that data from the 2008 presidential campaigns of both John McCain and Barack Obama were hacked by China. The goal of the hacking was to obtain internal data, including private emails and position papers, including the candidates' positions on China. The attacks were first detected by the FBI in the summer of 2008.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle. If you got some old gadgets you want to get rid of, don't hesitate. Don't wait. Don't say, "Oh, it's such a hassle. I don't know how am I going to take care of figuring out who's going to buy it." Forget all that. Go to gazelle.com. Type in the name of your old phone or your old tablet or in some cases some laptops, and they will tell you, "Look, we'll give you this much money for it. All you got to do is send it to us." And if you're like, "Well, okay, that sounds fine. That sounds like a lack of hassle, but I'm not sure I'm ready. I need some time, and I know that's going to get less valuable over time." Well, do it now because you can lock in the quote for 30 days. You got a month to go out there and figure out how you're going to replace that gadget or move data off it or whatever it is you need to do. You got 30 days. Lock that quote in today. Gazelle is the way to go, and you'll get paid fast by check, PayPal, or get an extra 5% with an Amazon gift card. Gazelle's now buying back a large selection of tablets as well. They want to let you know that they're not just buying iPads. They're also buying select Samsung tablets, Google Nexus, Kindle Fire, Microsoft Surface, Asus tablets. So go to gazelle.com now. Get an offer for your Samsung, your iPhone, your HTC, your BlackBerry smartphone, your iPad, other tablets. Do it today because gadgets really just don't get more valuable over time. They tend to get less valuable unless they're extraordinarily ancient. You don't want to wait that long. Find out what your iPhone, your Samsung, and your other Android smartphones are worth. Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com. Find out. Sell your used Samsung Galaxy iPhone or tablet today at gazelle.com. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, as he does most every Friday, is Darren Kitchen.
Hello.
Hacking his way across America, but he's in the studio today. Hey, how's it going, Darren?
Yeah, I hacked my way all the way to Petaluma.
hacked your way back.
Yeah, he hacked through the door, actually. It's in pieces out front.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, well, whatever. Yeah,
we'll get you a new one.
All right, these things happen.
It was unlocked.
Also becoming a regular Friday favorite, I keep hearing people saying they love this in the chat room and on Twitter. Len Peralta joining us to illustrate the stories. How's it going, Len?
It's going well, Tom. How are you?
Have you got your writer muscles warmed up?
I do. They're all ready to go, and I'm ready to draw the stories of the day.
Excellent. Well, we got a good one to start off with. Let's get right into the Prism story. We heard all the details there in the news fuse. Data collection been going on. A little back and forth. Washington Post saying that their source says all these tech companies are giving direct access to the servers. The tech companies have various denials saying we don't do that, but we do respond to legal requests. Of course, this is a legal request. The Director of National Intelligence coming forth with some details about how this works, what's right, what's not. Darren Kitchen, there's a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt around here. What do you think is the most important thing that is actually happening that we actually know that we should worry about?
Well, you shouldn't worry about it. What you should take away from it is that all of the internet is monitored. This has always been the case and will never cease to be the case. And so privacy, like security and everything else, is not convenient. It's really only there for the taking. So unless you're actively taking it, don't expect it. There's no... there should be no presumption of privacy on the internet, and nor should there be in like a public park. And as sad as that may seem, that's the reality of the situation. So now we can get into the nitty-gritty if you'd like.
And it's not like we haven't known about this. There's a guy beating us up in the chat room like, this has been going on since 2006. It's actually been going on since 2007 when the Bush administration started PRISM. But we've known there's been all kinds of surveillance going on of various types. I guess this is just the most damning evidence when we saw the actual court order yesterday. And it's actually the most comprehensive, especially when we get these PRISM allegations coming later on. But it's a good point. Aya, should we even be surprised?
You know, I think the thing is, I think a lot of us thought this already. We're like, oh, yeah, sure. We know we're being monitored. This is always happening. But when the story actually comes out and proves that you were right, and all these tinfoil hat people were correct, that no matter what you're doing, to the point where whatever you're typing is being seen pretty much anywhere, that's just very depressing, I think, to think that's actually the reality of the United States government. But then again, because this administration has got to be terrified of having another terrorist attack on their watch, that would be a fearsome thing. You don't want to be the sitting president and then another 9/11 happens. So they're doing this over analysis of everything. So this could be – the thing is, these laws are broad enough that this is allowed, but it's also just – it's just depressing.
I mean, isn't it depressing also that, you know, if you send a Gmail email, right, that Gmail – is parsing what is being said so that ads can be targeted to you based on what you're talking about. I mean, it's kind of like, okay, well, there are a variety of reasons that things are getting scraped. And, you know, there are a variety of reasons that people do things with that information too. I mean, safety is a little bit different than making money.
See, like I said, Sarah, though, it's, you know, if what you're concerned about is privacy, if you're creeped out by those automated robots that sell stuff to you on Gmail, and you actually adopt principles of privacy, then, well, like I do, I'm not concerned because I send an email to Tom using my PGP key, and what goes through the wire? EEF5204D6A, and yada, 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 yada. And so the ad doesn't really know what to...
Hey, that's my public key. Stop that.
No, that's actually something from something else. But anyway...
I'm not creeped out by it at all, actually. I think it's somewhat easy to ignore. I guess it's just, when you think about it, as Aya said, it's like the potential of some sort of a terrorist act. I mean, that's where this is stemming from. And it makes people extremely uncomfortable to think that they don't have the privacy that they thought they had. But like you said, they just don't. There are certain workarounds to it, but I don't think this is coming from some awful place because nobody's allowed to have privacy anymore.
Yeah, I mean, like what former Majority Leader Trent Lott said in 2006, you know, what are people worried about? You know, are you doing something you're not supposed to?
Right. That's the way this debate always goes. It's almost the Godwin's law of privacy.
It kind
debates,
of is.
You know, which is one person saying, like, well, if you have nothing to hide, then you shouldn't worry about it. But really, you know, that's kind of what they're saying. The information that came from James Clapper says there are strict rules in place about what we can use from this data. And the reason we get bulk data is because we need to search it over time as we find new evidence of actual bad guys. And we're only going to use it for the bad guys. And Congress, the executive branch, and this court, the secret FISA court, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance or FISC, I guess, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, they all oversee this and make sure that nobody is using this for anything except tracking down the bad guys. So don't worry. But the problem is we just have to trust that that's true. There is no public oversight. So, for example, if they were drifting into looking at people that weren't exactly terrorists, let's not say they go all the way and just spy on everybody, but they start saying, well, we think maybe people protesting about the government taxation is a risk. So let's start spying on those people. That might cause public outrage. They may say, no, that's not okay. How would we know? We wouldn't, because this is entirely secret. For example, if SOPA and PIPA had been under this kind of secrecy, we would have never known about them. So there wouldn't have been able to be any kind of public outreach. And I think that any kind of public outcry, and I think that's why people are very upset about this, because you're right. I mean, Darren, you and I, people who are savvy know, like, hey, if you don't want to be spied on, if you don't want to have information used against you, then you need to take action to encrypt it, and you have tools for that. But is that the way we want the government to work becomes the question at that point.
Well, there's this kind of two sides of it. There's the, like, you know, for the national security government, and then there's the, like, government we see with the SOPAs and the PIPAs, and really none of that actually matters when at the end of the day, you know, AT&T and Verizon and all of the communications providers are just allowing the NSA to become a man in the middle anyway. So all of this stuff can go through Congress and we can get all in arms about it. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, since 1961, the National Reconnaissance Office and other such agencies have been doing this kind of stuff on our soil and abroad. And kind of to play devil's advocate, when you think about it, like, okay, put yourself in the shoes of the NSA. You're trying to prevent something bad happening here. There's no good way to tell communications that's originating from the United States versus elsewhere and whatnot. You just have to kind of collect it all. And I mean, I see these guys at the hacker cons, and I know that a lot of them are good people with a lot of morals. And you know, these are actually why we end up with these leaks, because people with good morals. And so it's just a matter of, in that sense, just making sure that the watchers know that we're watching them.
Yeah, who watches the watchers? It's a great episode of Star Trek and a great principle for this debate. I definitely think that this becomes more of a problem over time. As you mentioned, in the 60s, we began this sort of thing. In the 70s is when the telcos started to cooperate more closely with the CIA and the NSA. And it was with Kalea in 1994 under Bill Clinton that they were actually required to put a backdoor into the telephony apparatus. And as Cad D. Mann and our other friend, anonymous friend in the chat room, pointed out in that USA Today story from 2006 is when we first heard public debate of collecting this metadata. So you see that the ability to collect data gets bigger all the time, and we need a check on that. And I think that's what's most disturbing, is we don't have a check on that kind of data collection. Just the way we want to have a check on companies like Facebook and Google, which are as big or bigger threats for privacy violation because we give them our information, you know? I mean, does that bother anybody? The fact that we're actually volunteering more information than the NSA can collect to companies out there. And I guess that completes the circle if they are cooperating with the NSA, whether it's by direct server access or indirect.
Yeah, I mean, you are. You're just offering it all up. I mean, I think the internet is the best thing that DARPA has ever done for the intelligence community. I mean, mind you, the internet spawned out of Department of Defense apparatus, and it's still controlled by the United States government for, you know, like as much as we try to pretend that the internet is free and open and that, you know, it's run by these non-government organizations like ICANN, ultimate rule comes down to the Department of Commerce and other such United States interests. And it's no wonder why, you know, like, remember when I was in Geneva Skyping in about, from the UN and the big... that the conversation about internet governance in the international world, right? There's a lot of nations that are just not fans of how the United States is in ultimate control. And one of the slides from PRISM, the headline is U.S. as world's telecommunications backbone, because, you know, you're always going to use the cheapest route. And if the United States is the cheapest route, then that's going to be used. So you want, and in many of the nations where we're, interested in information going through, they don't have the IXPs or the internet backbones that we have. So you end up anyway, we just end up with that data. So it's kind of like we're poised for the best place for a man in the middle.
Yeah, they call it the home field advantage.
Yep.
At the NSA. All right. Well, let's move on to more happy things, fun things like iRadio. Apple seems to have completed the trifecta here, Sarah.
Well, I think Pandora might not be very happy about that at all.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Source tells All Things D, as I mentioned in the news, views that Sony Music, which was kind of the holdout of Warner and Universal and Sony, which are basically the big three of music labels, has indeed signed on to Apple's, if it's going to be called iRadio, let's just call it iRadio for the purposes of this show, because that's what everybody else is calling it. And at that point, really, we might get an announcement on Monday for what iRadio would be. In general, nobody's really thinking that iRadio is going to be launched on Monday, because if the timing is to be believed that Sony Music has just got wrapped up within the last 24 hours... Apple may be able to announce something, but probably won't be able to roll out anything. But that also, All Things D reports that Apple may still be trying to sign up Sony/ATV, which is Sony's music publishing arm, which is a different thing. So there have to be agreements on both sides. What this should be, should everybody decide to play nicely, is an enhanced version of Pandora. So free streaming music service that would give users a little bit more control of their songs, ability to skip more. Anybody who's familiar with Pandora knows that there are skipping limits because they've got royalty agreements with the publishers, but not exactly a subscription radio service, something like Spotify or RDO. What I think is kind of interesting is that, you know, apparently the reason why did Sony hold out if the other companies were on board is Sony wanted to get paid if me as an iRadio listener started hearing the first, you know, few bars of a song, went, oh, I don't like the song, and went ahead and skipped. Apple said, well, that's, yeah, I mean, it's almost like an ad, right, that you close right away because you don't want to see it. You shouldn't have to be paid. We shouldn't have to pay you for something that clearly the user did not want to listen to. So kind of hard to say how it's shaking up. Darren, what do you think? I mean, do you think this is sort of a matter of Apple and the publishers figuring things out and we'll see something like iRadio on Monday?
Probably. I mean, they always work these deals out. It's in everybody's best interest to, you know, keep the money going. And it's like you get on the boat or what, you hold out. And, I mean, they'll hold out until the last minute to get the most dollars possible. But this is Apple we're talking about. So people want to get on board.
There was a story from Ad Age last week that, you know, Pandora pays out what I think it's like 6% in royalties to artists, and artists aren't really happy with that. And Apple could pay out something like 10%. So it would seem that as a music label, this just sounds better because when you talk about music labels, they're not necessarily so concerned with where the money's coming from. They just want the best percentage.
Yeah, I'm sure the labels are also not too thrilled with Apple way back in the day when they started iTunes saying, look, flat pricing for all. We're going to do 99 cents. We're not going to do variable pricing for a number of years. I'm sure they're still holding a grudge. And the thing is, they're trying to figure out, like you said, trying to make as much money as possible. I mean, it's a business after all. And the thing is, when these rights are very expensive. If you're going to have all of this music, you're going to have every single song you could possibly get, and Apple has it, and they have maybe they have a larger catalog than Spotify or Pandora or anything like that. If they can hang their hat on a gigantic library, that makes this service more worthwhile to these companies, and they want to get paid for it.
I'm curious to see. I mean, I think you're right, Sarah. We're not going to actually see this release on Monday at WWDC. We're not going to see iOS 7 release at WWDC. They're going to announce a date. So my guess is they just fold this in as part of the features that will be available when iOS 7 comes out. And maybe it'll have a separate release date. Maybe it won't. But I'm curious to see how they make it better. They're behind in this, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, plenty of people do streaming services and do them well right now. So how does Apple differentiate theirs so that it gets the same effect of they were late to tablets, they were late to phones, they were late to a lot of things that they ended up dominating because they do them well. So can they do that with this?
Well, and I see some people in chat saying, well, what, you know, Google's way ahead of Apple in this regard. But, you know, the Google Music All Access service is different. I mean, that's more of a Spotify than a Pandora. And I think anybody who uses Pandora over a monthly subscription service and likes it has their reasons. You know, there's the kind of that radio element, there's an element of surprise, sort of a, I want somebody else to kind of DJ this genre that I'm interested in listening to. So Apple's late to the game, but if it can do things, if it can get around restrictions that Pandora has that kind of irritate people, for example, having skip restrictions. You know, I can only skip so many times and then that's the end of it, you know, and I've got music listening caps as a free user. They're really, really, you know, you'd have to listen quite a bit to reach those caps, but they are in place. So if Apple can do what Pandora does better, then really it's kind of like the first challenger Pandora has ever had.
So what I'm realizing right now is that Apple has a ton of data on you already from if you signed up for Genius, or if you've had your old music library for years and they have that skip count that changes as you're going along. When you first join Pandora, you have to go to that interactive phase of thumbing up, thumbing down things to see to help Pandora get a better idea. The fact is Apple actually has a huge jump. I'm realizing this. They have. I've been using iTunes for years, and the skip counts on certain songs in my library should influence what songs I'd be given on a radio station. If it was like a Genius Radio or something. Mm-hmm. That way, the songs that are played are music that I might want and buy, so Apple might have that to their advantage because they've been in the music business far, far longer than Google or Amazon.
500 million active users, meaning users that have a credit card associated with their Apple ID, was the last I heard. So huge potential, obviously.
Poor Slacker Radio. Where are they in all this, too?
They're slacking.
Yeah. All right. Another big iOS-related story, but not from Apple. BlueStacks, you think of them when you think of Android, but they're doing some crazy stuff here, at least they're claiming to, iOS.
Yeah, this is bizarre. BlueStacks announced that its Android-powered GamePop console is going to run iOS games, and they're saying it's going to be able to run iOS games using something called Looking Glass, which works at an API level. Now, the CEO of BlueStacks, Rosen Sharma, says that it's not quite virtualization or emulation as you've known it. They've recreated the APIs that iOS provides without using any Apple code, so I guess they figure that won't get them sued. This would allow an iOS game developer to submit their app to the GamePop catalog. Sharma says that Looking Glass does all the work. All the developer has to do is change their payment backend so it works with their subscription model, and that's it. They don't have to do anything else to their game. Now, BlueStacks is currently giving away their console. If you sign up for a year subscription, you get the console and a controller. That ends at June. After June, that combo costs you $130. $7 a month gives you access to GamePop's game catalog. Darren, iOS games on Android. What?
Sure, there's Windows programs on Linux. It's called Wine. It's not an emulator either. And I believe it recreates much of the API without recycling Microsoft code, which, of course, isn't open source, and I don't believe nor is iOS. So, hey, technically feasible? Totally. Awesome? Totally. Lawsuit bait? Absolutely. Do you remember when Adobe came out with a cross-platform compiler mm-hmm. for Android and iOS, and Apple freaked because they were like, you know, that's not how our developers should be developing apps for our OS. We're not going to approve this in our thing. But here's the thing. This is outside of Apple's control. If it's like, you know, they get to control their own walled garden, what comes in? Do they get to control what goes out? Could they say, look, if you're going to Angry Birds, if you're going to go to that what do we call this pop thingy?
Game Pop,
then you're out of the Apple store. I mean, I could imagine them changing the terms of service in that case.
It's definitely different than the whole UI development that Adobe tried. That you would do this once and compile for multiple platforms. That is on the developer side. This idea of having two versions of it. Yeah, we'll submit it to this store and that store, I find surprising.
You know what it's like? It's like when Real tried to allow iTunes DRM'd tracks, the Fairplay DRM, to work in Real.
Totally.
And Apple went after them, both with lawsuit threats, but also by changing up the DRM. I wonder if they can do something like that because the apps are DRM'd as well.
You've got the technicals on the technical side. There's the DRM on the legal side. There's the license agreements. Apple's got ways to fight this if they don't like it. I guarantee you they don't like it. But just the technical achievement makes you really wonder when is that technology coming to one of these? Because don't get me wrong, like the console's spiffy and whatnot, but if there's no technological reason why you can't have the best of Microsoft, Google, and Apple all on one device, bring it on.
The other thing is this brings iOS applications to the television. Apple, for some reason, hasn't done this with the Apple TV at all. You can do mirroring. Mm-hmm. You can't really install applications for the Apple TV. Why isn't Apple getting on this for themselves? Why would they even, if they see this, Sarah, do you think they're going to react and say, wait a second, you know those apps we're working on for iOS, for Apple TV? We should get on that now.
Well, yes, I think Apple probably is working on that. We just haven't seen the fruits of their labor yet. But no, I don't see Apple allowing this to continue 1 second longer than they have to. I mean, the whole thing is the whole thing with game development, right, is back in the day, you were lucky if something came to Android in somewhat of a reasonable time after it launched on iOS. Now that time is shrinking. Some apps come to Android first. Many launch for both around the same time. There are definitely a few iOS games I can think of that Android people grumble about, when's it coming to Android, that sort of thing. But I expect that to continue to drop. But as a developer or a team of developers, to code for iOS and Android is just very labor intensive, right? So if you only have to do one, mm-hmm. and then you've got both stores and you're good to go, and now you're covering millions and millions of people, and you don't have to do any of the work, that sounds great. But why would Apple want that to be the case? Apple's like, no, you got to suffer to build something for Android.
BlueStacks phone.
And that's what I was going to ask you. The fact this really differentiate this as a console, but what a, what's stopping BlueStacks from bringing this to and whatever phone they want to anoint? They could make a killing on this.
You know, another way to look at this is, what if Microsoft had announced, oh, and the Xbox One, the last, the other cool thing, there's, they could do the bring back the one, there's one more thing. They could be like, and it runs PlayStation 3 games, you know?
Whoa.
It's the same idea.
Except they won't do it.
Well, no, because Microsoft isn't some little startup that can make these kinds of bold moves.
Right. And they also, and they don't to... want you to even think it's worth it. They're like, we're going to have all the great games anyway. Why would you ever want to run a PS3 game? But you could totally do it, because what Microsoft's doing is cloud-based, right? They're every game that you install from Microsoft is going to be cloud-based. In fact, they put a couple postings up yesterday about how this is going to work regarding used games in particular. They said there are two requirements to giving your games away to friends. You can only give them to people who have been on your friends list for at least 30 days, and each game can only be given once. Once you give it to a friend, that friend can't give it to anybody else. Microsoft will handle the cloud end of game transfers, but publishers control whether you're allowed to give it away or if you want to sell it back. Used games market's going to change completely under this. The publishers decide whether retail outlets can sell used games or not, and the publishers can take a cut of any used games sold. The balance of this, because they're doing this stuff in the cloud now, up to 10 family members can log in and play from a shared library. And you may say, well, they can already play my game anyway, on any Xbox One. So you install a copy of Portal on your Xbox. Up to 10 family members can then be authorized to play that, and they can play it on any Xbox. They can be over at their friend's house and play your copy of Portal on the friend's Xbox.
How do they figure out who is a family member?
You register them from that original Xbox. So you say, like, okay, I've installed it here. They ask the NSA, exactly.
They take a sample of your blood.
Your home Xbox has to check once every 24 hours to make sure it's connected to the internet to play games. So if you don't have an internet connection, you're not going to be able to play games on the Xbox One. It only has to ping it, so it doesn't have to be a high broadband connection, but it will have to do it. And if you're playing one of your games from a friend's Xbox, you're accessing it through the cloud, it's going to check every hour. No renting or loaning of games at launch. You either give it away or that's it. They say they're going to work on that, but at launch, that's not going to happen. And here's another quote. When Xbox One is on and you're simply having a conversation in your living room, your conversation is not being recorded or uploaded.
By the NSA.
At least by Microsoft. The NSA might be, because they can turn on your phone remotely. They also say data gathered during normal use won't leave the console without your explicit permission. So some data security stuff top of mind for people right now. But what do you think of this basically shutting down the used game market?
I think that...
Sounds complicated.
I mean, this kind of stuff has been going on for the last 20, almost 5 years with the provisions that were added to the... what is it? The right of first sale thing, what was it called? The Computer Software Rental Amendments Act of 1990, where, you know, Congress seeing that there's potential for piracy and stuff, and that hurts the economy. And so anything to save that, we'll go ahead and put some provisions in there so that, that, you know, adds in a loophole when it comes to the used market of software. So this is nothing drastically new. It's just new in the gaming industry, well, at least in the console gaming industry. You know, in the PC gaming industry, this has been a headache for the last decade.
Yeah, that's the thing. This is what happens on tablets, on mobile phones. You buy an app, you're not thinking, hey, how can I resell this? No, I don't see people freaking out.
No. I'm sorry. Did you say you bought an app? You didn't buy an app.
I licensed the app.
Yes.
I couldn't transfer my license to Sarah with my iOS app. I didn't like this app. Can I sell it on the used market? Mm-hmm. People don't freak out about that as much because we've been trained. But this is consoles. We've had a history of being able to take a disc and sell it to somebody else or just trade them if you wanted to. I think this is going to change. The fact that Microsoft even is giving all of these are almost concessions to people who are used to the old system.
Yeah.
They could just be like, look, you bought it. It's on that console. That's the way it works. It's in the cloud. Yes, sure, you can access it, and we're not going to tell you about anything else. I'm surprised they even mentioned this fact that they weren't. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I think they had to do this in order to make the cloud-based system work with the publishers. That's all. Like for Microsoft to say, hey, we want to store these in the cloud and let people access them from wherever. The publishers said, well, great. Since you're tracking it anyway, you're going to restrict the used sales. I think it was probably a bargain is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that, and they are reacting to a lot of the reports that were out there about Microsoft potentially taking a cut of used game sales. Microsoft denied that. The third-party publishers will be able to take a cut of the sales for used game sales, if I understand this right. So it seems like they're very reactionary. They want to make sure they have good press going into E3 because Microsoft really doesn't need bad press for this Xbox One.
What if you have a new friend and you guys just really get along and they've only been on your friend list for 10 days because they just moved to the neighborhood?
Well, that's not a real friend, sir.
You're going to have to be...
I don't agree. I think sometimes
you have to wait 20 days to make sure the friendship will last.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like the Supreme Court defined...
28 days as friends, you're not friends.
And this is going to change prenuptial agreements forever as well. I mean, just imagine. Actually, what this changes is Gamefly, Blockbuster, all those other places that don't exist anymore. Oh, right. Oh, I'm friends with Gamefly.
With
totally.
Rentals?
Yeah. They're like rentals Tom.
Out the door. Not you, this Tom, is but the... Hurt. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What?
I was just saying, you know, Gamefly becomes like Tom, but like the MySpace Tom, not you, Tom Mara. Although everybody should friend Tom Mara as well.
Tom is not my friend. I joined MySpace before they made you be Tom's friend.
Also, MySpace isn't on the list of the Prism slides. I'm sorry, not to go back to the NSA things, but it's just
opportunity
like,
for MySpace.
That brings up a good point because Google said we only give data to the NSA or to any government agency if they have a court order and they come to us. We don't give them direct access to our servers, but they're a little leaky with Google Wallet. But that's a different kind of leaky. They're just leaking money. In fact, this is not making them any money, is it, Sarah?
No, it sounds like no. Apparently, this is according to an article over at Business Week. Google doesn't generate fee revenue from transactions stemming from Google Wallet the way that a bank or PayPal or a company like Square does. Forrester Research estimates that the mobile payment space is going to be huge. It will top $90 billion by 2017 annually, up from $12.8 billion, which was the number last year. But companies like the PayPals and the Squares charge retailer fees in excess of what they owe to credit card companies, and it's a model that works. Google's been doing other stuff. I mean, Google collects data. They want to target ads to consumers based on our buying habits, our spending habits. But they pay such high fees to credit card companies that it ends up being a losing game for them. They're losing money on each transaction. So says Osama Bedler, who stepped down as head of Wallet on May 20th and is going to leave Google shortly, any day now. So Google has apparently many developers in the hundreds that have been working on Google Wallet up until this point. They spent about $300 million buying digital payment startups. So it's not just that they have a lot of developers working on it, but they're actively trying to make the arm of Google stronger. But Wallet has been downloaded fewer than 10 million times in the last 2 years since launch. That's just according to Play Numbers. Now, if you're a really, really small company, 10 million might sound really, really huge, but perhaps not for something like Google Wallet. And of course, then there's the restrictions of which phones actually can have Google Wallet. You've got Sprint that supports Wallet. Then you've got Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile blocking it. They're teaming up to do their own version called ISIS and so on and so forth. Ayaz, what do you think? Does this seem like Google Wallet is not the best idea? I mean, they talked about having a physical credit card. There are rumors that maybe Google's shelving that. Are they just moving in another direction? You got Google Glass and all that stuff?
I think Google's basically on an information hunt, right? Like you were saying, if they're tracking your credit card purchases, they can give you better targeted ads. In the long run, this will make them money. Short term, they have all these processing fees. This is costing them on a transaction based, every transaction. It's kind of like how game consoles were sold at a loss if they make the money on the games. In the long run, Google will probably make money on this. Kind of like Google Fiber is kind of a long-term gamble. This, for Google, having as much data about your actions, about things that you spend money on, mm-hmm. that is going to bring some really great targeted ads that you will click and they can charge more for. So it's going to be a long-term game because Google Wallet is running up against a lot of competition with ISIS and all these other competitors for mobile payments. But this is Google, and I think they got the legs to handle this.
Darren, do you agree? Do you think that Google doesn't so much care if Google Wallet is bleeding money, if it improves their bottom line via data from all of us, which is what Google is so good at?
Well, I mean, like, you know, I, as pointed out, it's kind of one of those things where once they hit critical mass on this, they'll stop losing the money and start, you know, there's so much potential money to be made. I think the real problem is that they're going up against the debt slavery system, which is set up in such a way that the rules of the game are already laid out, and it's going to be an uphill battle.
Tom, what do you think? I mean, it sounds in a way that some of these Google Wallet projects are getting pulled back from rather than ramping up. We've got executives leaving the company. You have rumors that maybe this whole Google credit card that's attached to Wallet isn't the best idea. Is Google kind of like, maybe we don't want to go up against the PayPals right now. Maybe we want to focus our efforts elsewhere.
Yeah, that is interesting. I kind of look at that and I think it looks similar to what we've been seeing Google overall, which is they are actually focusing. They're eliminating things. And maybe within the Google Wallet system, they're saying, you know what? We can be a front-end payer like a PayPal, but we probably shouldn't be Square. We probably shouldn't be actually taking credit cards and creating credit cards and things like that. So maybe that's why they're pulling it back. It's just to focus and say, let's be the organizer of your information. And that information could be Visa, MasterCard, whatever. But let's not actually try to move out into the real world and do this.
Yeah.
All right, let's finish up with a discussion on Yahoo buying Zobni. Zobni, they've been around forever. I haven't heard about them in a while.
Yeah, it's continuing my fascination with Yahoo and their acquisitions. All Things D is reporting that Yahoo is in serious discussions to buy Zobni. Zobni, that's inbox spelled backwards, by the way. Zobni makes an address book app for iOS and Android, as well as plugins for Gmail and Outlook. The two companies have been talking for a while, but a deal appears imminent now, according to All Things D. Now, the CEO of Zobni previously worked at Yahoo as an executive in charge of communications products and social search from 2005 to 2008. Now, this morning, I hadn't tried out this application, so I tried it out myself. Smarter is the application for iOS. It's a contact manager that puts together your contacts from Twitter, Gmail, iCloud, Yahoo, LinkedIn, Facebook, and there's still more. I'm not adding there. It uses three tabs to show you contact info on someone, your history with that person, like how often you communicate, calendar events involving that person, and another tab that's for, it says common, the people you too contact the most frequently. It seems pretty slick. It kind of reminded me of the People Hub on Windows Phone, or that amazing thing about WebOS where it would take all your contact information from all the networks and put them on one location. Now, Zobni says it analyzes the data from those various networks and builds complete profiles for you. That's the way this is supposed to work. Sarah, do you think Zobni's technology sounds like something Yahoo would take and integrate into Yahoo Mail, or do you think they would let this company operate independently?
Well, I mean, what's so nice about Zobni that I have enjoyed in the past, I actually turned it off recently because I was trying out a competitor using Gmail, but it's the whole context, right? So I get an email from somebody and I've got a nice little thing in the right-hand rail that gives me more information about that person, their contact information. It's a little contact card that's built in and looks really nice. I think it makes perfect sense for Yahoo. Yahoo is clearly trying to step up their mail offering to be something that people take seriously, like Gmail. And I think that if you're already a Zobni user and you're not interested in using Yahoo Mail, it would be very smart for Yahoo not to just cut you off, but try to, I don't know, lure you in somehow with, well, Zobni works really well, and I know you already love the service, but look at these three new features that you also get if you switch over to Yahoo Mail.
Dan, what do you make of this? Do you think Zobni is the next company to be acquired by Yahoo?
I mean, potentially. I think what's most interesting here is just the whole fascination of like tying in basically your whole social graph, your metadata of who you talk to and when. It's you know, it's just fascinating to see the just what the value is on a personal level of that kind of data, you know, and kind of analogies with the first story. So, sorry.
Zobni's working.
I'm just saying, Zobni needs to watch out because the NSA could come out with their own app that could do this a lot better.
They're probably ready.
And Darren Kitchen has successfully tied every story back to the NSA.
So sorry about that.
That's like the double hat trick or something.
Yeah, it is.
Tom, what do you think about this? These plugins, when I'm looking at them on Outlook and in Gmail, they kind of look like the Google knowledge graph. You'd see on the right side, you have this context-based information. It seems like it'd be good for Yahoo to have something like that to differentiate itself. But do you think they would take it away as a plugin for something like Outlook or Gmail?
I don't think they'd take it away. I think they'd probably leave it running as it is, but I don't think they leave it separate. I think they integrate it into Yahoo and say, this is the new Yahoo Contacts service. At least that's what I would do if I were Yahoo and I took over this one. Maybe you call it Yahoo Zobni if there's some branding associated there you don't want to lose, at least for a while. But this isn't like a Flickr or a Tumblr where it's needs to exist on its own. In fact, for Yahoo, I think it needs to be part of their suite of offerings. But you don't want to reduce its functionality either.
Yeah, I really like what it could do for something like iOS. I think Apple should be actually looking at Zobni because iOS does not do a very good job handling contacts. I've been using Google Contacts for a while. I don't like the way it handles everything either. If this is actually a really intriguing piece of software, and if Yahoo picks it up, I think they're actually really building and bolstering their mail lineup. Their redesign was pretty good. It wasn't hated. I guess that's a success when you change something that's so widely used. If they can get added functionality, I think that could be great.
All right, let's move on and see what's coming up next week or maybe in the future on the calendar.
BlackBerry Messenger, BBM, is not coming to iOS and Android, at least not by June 27th, confirms BlackBerry. So there you go.
T-Mobile UK is the one who originally tweeted that, though. That's why we mentioned it yesterday. But then BlackBerry's like, no.
We heard that crazy rumor. And then just a reminder, Monday is going to be a little bit different. TNT will start at 9 a.m. or thereabouts. We've got quite a few announcements that we have to cover that day. But we'll start, at least at this point, we're planning on starting at 9 a.m. because WWDC coverage starts at 10 a.m. Pacific time, of course. Right here in the Twit studio. We're going to be here with bells on. Coffee and donuts.
So Microsoft announcements covered during TNT and during the WWDC announcement, as far as I know right now. And then at 6 p.m. is the Sony announcement from E3. And I'll be covering that with a cast of all-stars. Right now, we got actually way too many more people than Skype machines. We'll figure it out, though. Scott Johnson, Nicole Spagnolo, and Brian Dunaway from the Final Score podcast will join us. Brian Brushwood's going to join us. Iaz will be in the studio with us. So it's going to be a fun time covering the Sony thing at 6 tomorrow as well. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
All right, we've got a caller today who wonders if a certain company should acquire Hulu. What certain company would that be?
Hey, guys. This is Chris. I was just listening to Thursday's show where you were talking about Hulu possibly being acquired by someone. And my brain got to thinking and was wondering if it would be an attractive purchase for somebody like Facebook to bring more eyeballs in and give them an opportunity to roll out a premium Facebook experience like everybody's always rumoring every few months that they're going to do and charge you to access Facebook. So just curious to see what you guys think. Hope you guys have a great Friday. Bye.
But you're not the customer. You're the product. Why would you pay?
I don't know how this would work. I see Facebook's got a ton of money, but why would they bother with this?
It's not an entirely ridiculous idea for Facebook to buy Hulu. I mean, they could definitely feature that, kind of the way they bought Instagram, right? Like, have Hulu operate independently, but then do this amazing video tie-in. I don't think it's the most likely, though. And I certainly don't think they're going to charge you to access Facebook. That's just not going to happen. Ever. I promise. Oh, wait a minute. Now it's totally going to happen.
Nice, Tom.
I just ruined Facebook. Hooroo!
That was you?
Thank goodness.
Yes. So, seriously?
On to MySpace.
That is it. Back to Friendster.
Go back.
GeoCities. All right. Let's thank Len Peralta, who is on the audio podcast. You haven't even noticed. He's been amazingly illustrating our stories through here. Take us through what you drew for us today, Len. There's some great stuff. People in the chat room are going nuts about it.
Sure. Thank you. I'll go backwards here from the Zobni one because that's the one I had the hardest time with. I had never heard of Zobni, but I thought it had a funny name. So I personified Zobni. There's Yahoo looking at Zobni, who's saying, "It's me, Zobni. I've got a funny name." Silly. We got
it's a me, Google. Zobni.
It's a me, Zobni. Right. Google Plus, the Google Wallet leaking. Instead of Google Plus, it's Google Minus. Walking in the chat room, I was having a little bit of problems with the Google logo, so I had to look that up. But it's Google Minus. This is a poor GameStop guy, Carl, who says who's wondering if this means the Xbox One means he's out of a job. I guess we'll find out soon, Carl. This is the GamePop machine arguing with Apple. about getting their iOS games on the GamePop, and the Apple saying, "Hey, quit copying me! Copying me! Stop that!" So
entertaining. They're like kids in the backseat.
The iRadio, the little boombox with the Apple iRadio there. It's kind of a neat little throwback to the 80s, of course. And then finally, the NSA story, which is the big story, which is leading everything. That's a little bit of the all-seeing eye and some sort of creepy arm coming out from behind there. So those are the stories of the day, folks.
Excellent work, man. They get better every week. I don't know how you do it. It's amazing.
I don't know how I do it either. I have little midgets working here for me, doing it all.
Ah, you mean your family. I see.
That's right. Exactly.
LenPeralta.com. It's LenPeralta.com. If you want to find out more of Len's work. And you've been putting up one or so of these every week in your store, too, right?
Yeah. Over at peraltartsy.shopify.com. You follow me at Len Peralta on Twitter. I have all the links there, and you can purchase some of the stuff I've done, probably something today, and also from the past couple weeks as well.
Excellent. Thanks for doing that, man. It's really fun.
No problem. It's a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Darren Kitchen, thank you for the double hat trick NSA tie back. That's why we have you on.
Thank you.
Hack5.org and hackacrossamerica.com. What's the next stop? What's the next plans? What's on the next Hack 5?
June 15th, huge meetup, Hack Across Seattle. So if you're in the Pacific Northwest, come on out, because we're going to the Living Computer Museum to see all of those like PDP-11s and cool stuff like that. And then we're going to the Metrics Create Space for a little hacker stuff, and then GameWorks to play some classic arcade games. And then Hack Across Los Angeles, June 22nd, come on out. We're going to go see Space Shuttle Endeavor at the California Science Center at noon. So hackacrossamerica.com for those. Oh, in San Diego. The 29th. That's going to be fantastic. Oh, and free drinks. Free drinks at the LA one. That's going to be huge. One.
That's the only reason. I mean, that's an extra reason why I'm coming. Don't forget about our subreddit, folks. TechNewsToday.reddit.com, a place to submit stories that we look at every day, see how many votes they're getting, what people are interested in. Also, don't forget about our best of submissions, twit.tv/best of. If you liked a particular moment of this or any show anywhere on the network, go to twit.tv/best of and let us know so we can put it in our best of show at the end of the year. We've got a hangout coming to live.twit.tv June 12th at 4:30 p.m. Pacific to just brainstorm with members of the audience. And of course, the big coverage, WWDC and E3, coming up on Monday. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT, email us TNT@twit.tv, or give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific. We'll see you then.
Hi, the government.